And it is a very good Easter Monday race day morning, and we are with you up until midday. And for the next 2 hours, I'm excited because I'm going to be joined. I am joined by Lizzie Joff sitting next to me here at the Riverside Complex. Lizzie, great to see you.
Thank you, Michael. Yeah, it's great to be here. It's a lovely morning out here, lovely Easter morning. And it's a hive of activity, isn't it? And it's always exciting sales time. But of course, we're leading into a very exciting week coming up to the championships as well.
Absolutely. Do you get itchy fingers? I know you're a horse lady through and through when you see the quality and calibre of the horse flesh that is on offer here this week.
Yeah, probably bar myself from coming out here tomorrow and putting my hand up. But yeah, there's always quality at this sale. And in particular, I think this sale has got a really great sort of selection, and really excited to see what they're going to go for.
Speaking of barred, Matt Stewart wasn't allowed in New South Wales. Peter Vallandy shut the border. So he is back in the Melbourne studio. How are you, Matty?
I thought that must have been the true reason, to be honest. The PVL had sort of put up the wall, the temporary wall. I was just thinking, listening to Lizzie, because you know we have this thing that we talk about, the greatest voices in racing. I'd love to be stuck in a lift with Lizzie, Bill Wilde and Dave Eustace and just hear them talk and talk. They've got Lizzie, you have the nicest, or one of the top three voices in racing, I've decided.
Top three.
Thank you, Matt. I'm very, very honoured.
Would you like to be stuck in a lift with Matt Stewart?
Of course, yes. I mean, it wouldn't be so bad. I mean, of course, as long as he doesn't sort of attack me like he attacks Ron Duffersey.
Well, anything is possible. How do you think Mark Webster's voice sounds, Matty? Because we've got the boss with us here as well. Good morning, Mark. How are you?
Hey, good morning. I'll do a bit of a demo, Matty. Let me know if I make top five.
You need that sort of midnight till dawn, overnight DJ sort of thing happening there, Mark. Now, Mark's a top 20 voice. He's up there as well. But Lizzie's always been close to the top of my list of voices I just like listening to.
This is a new segment. We'll delve into this. Racing's top voices. You can count down from 20 to number one over the coming weeks. Matty, you would love it here because I know we get to spend a lot of time at the English Premier Sale. And for me, this is the first time I've been out to this Riverside Complex up here, even though it's the fourth year, because, Mark, obviously it was the Phantom Sale last year. We had no people on the ground here, and I've been blown away by this complex. You've got the five-star hotel over there, but it's horse heaven here. You must be rapt with how it's all come to fruition when it was planned all those years ago.
Oh, very happy with it. Yeah, look, it was a long time in the planning. Believe it or not, 2009, we took an option to buy this land off the Turf Club. So, yeah, look, a lot of planning. We actually came up with three different designs, so it changed three times before we actually laid a brick here. And I'm pretty happy with how we've, you know, how it's come together. Probably a few things I'd still tweak, but nonetheless, you know, it's working well. Never looks that busy here. That's one of the things, you know, Michael, when you look about the place, and that's because it's so spread out. You know, the buyers don't have to queue up to look at horses. There's plenty of parade lanes for them, and plenty of parking.
You've been all around the world in planning this. Is this the number one sales complex and the template for the future around the world?
I think so.
Yep.
Look, we're the only one that's actually added a hotel to the facility, and we've actually made it a multi-purpose facility. But let's face it, horse auction businesses, their grounds are empty 90% of the year. It doesn't matter whether you're here, UK, US. I mean, they're ghost towns normally, but we try and activate ours right through the year with weddings, events, conferences. You know, the biggest conference we've had here, we had 1,000 delegates, and they were using all of these hospitality pavilions around the grounds as breakout rooms for their events. So, you know, it's just great to see it being used. These stables over here get used for trade shows and things like that. People set up their stalls in there rather than setting up a temporary 3x3 booth. We just wind the front wall, just sort of rotates back, and there you go. People can plug into the cables at the back, plug into the power points at the back, and off they go, and we've got an exhibition centre. So, yeah, delighted that it's actually delivering on all of that.
What's been the feedback from the breeders here? Have they liked the change to Riverside?
Yes, I think, you know, some of them were quite warm to it before they came here, but it's fair to say that a lot of them were a bit nervous about coming here. And I can understand the sentimental attachment to Newmarket at Randwick and the fact that it's proximity to, you know, the eastern suburbs, the beach, the city, etc., all the good restaurants. But I definitely think they've warmed to it. If I were to say to them, do you want to go back and have about a quarter of the parade space you used to have, I don't think they'd cope. you know, they're so used to having the space now, and I don't think they'd give that up for anything.
And the horses seem as though they're a lot more happier as well in this type of environment.
Oh, 100%. Yeah, they're a lot happier because they're not parading on top of themselves, and so you don't see those near misses. I mean, some of those parade areas at Newmarket I used to call the killing fields. You know, you go down the back there, sort of, if you remember Stable 3, right down the back near the car park. My goodness, on a day like today, the horses rearing, jumping around on top of each other, and it was quite dangerous. So you won't see any of that here.
And I guess Market's got to create its own legend now, doesn't it, and its own history. And one of my great regrets was that I never went to a sale at Newmarket, and I heard all the legendary stories of the famous, was it a fig tree? There was an iconic tree where sometimes, you know, a lot of great thought took place and bidding and so on. But I think that the story with where you are now is that as time goes by, it'll create its own legend of legendary events that occur there with sales prices and activities and various faces that occur. So I guess it's a building block situation with it now, isn't it?
Yeah, that's right. Look, it's hard to replicate history, and there's been a lot of history there and a lot of great horses sold under that old fig tree, which is still there. And believe it or not, the skeleton of the old sales arena is still there. It's now a kids' playground.
Oh, really?
And it's very, very tastefully done. If you're ever in Sydney, pop out there and have a look. And there are a number of restaurants surrounding it. You can go there and either have a picnic or sit in the restaurant and look at the kids playing in the old sales arena. But, yeah, in terms of here, you know, we did bring a couple of saplings from that old fig tree out here. And there's one planted in the northwest corner of the grounds overlooking the track here at Warwick Farm. You know, it's only about 10 or 11 metres tall now, but yes, we did bring a little bit of that with us. And we also tried to replicate the fig trees with these beautiful white structures that Michael's looking at the moment, which is the back parade ring. We call them two figs. They're a lot tidier. We don't have to pick up every morning. So. And they also collect water. They're huge funnels. And we pretty much recycle all the water here for the ground. So environmentally, they have a purpose as well.
Visually, from the aerial, looking up from the top of the hotel, it is quite spectacular as well. And Maddie, the hotel, it's a 5-star hotel. And I have found out that there is a presidential suite. The number one suite is the Black Caviar suite. Now, is it true that's where Lizzie Jelps is residing this week?
Well, I think she's got herself booked in there for later in the week. But,
I'm not in the Black Caviar suite. Not this time, maybe later on in the year.
It's a pretty special suite. You're quite right. It's on the top floor of the hotel. It's room 888.
Ah, yes.
And, you know, one of the first guests in there, I think the first official guest was Peter Moody before it was officially opened. And then
he would have trashed it.
Well, he had a party in there, I can tell you, because he kept
smelling of smoke after the first time.
he kept saying the fridge needed topping up. But and he wanted more Queensland beers. I mean, he didn't like the boutique 4X, beers we had in there. Well, that's true. That was the first feedback we had officially as a hotel, is we need more 4X in the caviar suite.
Mark, everyone's saying this is a spectacular catalogue. And Lizzie, I know you're going to be involved covering it on English TV throughout the week as well. Before I ask Mark, what's your assessment of the stallions, the stock we've got this year? The new breeds, the freshman sires, have been so exciting so far.
So exciting so far, and always is. There's always a bit of anticipation, isn't there, leading into these sales when there is those first season sires that are being exposed for the first time, and all reports are that they're great types, and as you would imagine, they only end up at the Easter yearling sale if they are really quality individuals. And I think that's what everyone sort of gets so excited about this year. But I suppose this year, Mark, it's not so much all about the top lots. It's also about the value underneath those really expensive, you know, big sort of syndicates and colts.
Yeah, you're right, Lizzie. Look, we can get carried away about selling what we probably call the celebrity yearlings. You know, celebrity yearlings are the ones that, you know, got a famous mother or sibling in the top of the pedigree, and of course by the big sires. Particularly here at Easter, the sale is known more for the proven sires. You know, we have the classic at Melbourne sale for a lot of the freshmen second season, but there are some in this sale. But the bulk of this sale and the turnover is going to be proven sires from very, very deep proven female families. that's the formula here. It's why this sale has 460 odd catalogue, not 1,000. It is a little boutique. But on the value front, you know, it can also prove to be a sale where you can buy, you know, a cracking yearling for under 200,000, and they can go on to perform like Satori, the recent Group One winner. Exceedance, I think, was only 180,000. Went on to win the Coolmore and go to stud for 30 odd million. So you can buy some great value here, and we do encourage people not to be overwhelmed by, you know, the nature of this sale. Yes, there will be $1 million yearlings, but 2/3 of this catalogue will sell for under the average, and the sale average is about 300. 2/3 are under it, and a truckload of them can go on and have done win at the top level.
Mark, can you kind of explain to us the alternative economy of the yearling sale? They always seem to defy every other indicator in society. If everything else is down, yearling prices seem to be up. There seems to be a dream fantasy element to the economy of the yearling sale that sort of takes hold. What is it about yearling sales and prices and the attraction to yearling sales with that economy that I'm talking about?
Yeah, I think you're right, Matt. Look, people outside the industry might find it a little bit difficult to understand why it has been so strong this year, but I think it really comes back to the state of the racing industry. That's the key. You know, we're very much linked to the hip there with the racing industry, and it's going so well. You know, we didn't lose many days to COVID, one or two here and there, but otherwise we carried on right through that period whilst footy and everything else stopped. I know all those other sports got back on their feet at some point, but racing really didn't stop. And, you know, people with their discretionary income are spending it on this rather than a trip to Rome or to other parts of the world. I also think the quality of trainers and syndicators here in Australia is much higher than in other parts of the world. And the trainers that we have here, you know, a lot of them are business people now. They're not just training the horse anymore. They're engaging with their clients all the time and building a network. So they're in the business of buying. Effectively, if you look at it this way, we're selling wholesale, and then they're retailing these horses to the marketplace and doing a great job of it.
And I suppose when we look at why the yearlings are getting, you know, sold for such big money, we've got to look at the prize money as well. The return of investment is certainly there for Australian racing.
Oh, 100%. You know, and obviously the prize money in general has increased, whether it's midweek or Saturday. But then we've just had this growth of the $1 million-plus races. They're everywhere. You know, you've got a lot of innovation in this industry right across the country. And those innovative races that are being put on are driving even more interest. There are more $1 million races here in Australia than anywhere in the world. And people want to chase seven figures.
The Victorian Alliance is here, Matty. Mytho, Suman Hedge and the team, they're ready to buy up the Stallion Syndicates. How excited do you get, be honest, Mark, when you see James Harron in one corner, you see the Coolmore boys in the other, Victorian Alliance there, and they're all locked on a colt?
Yes, I'm happy with that scenario. I'd like Hawks in another corner.
Yeah.
Hong Kong Jockey Club maybe just at the back. Someone else up in a box, Kieran Ma. And then that's the perfect storm, really. Look, those big colts don't get missed, you know, provided they vet well, they're not missed. And, you know, we love to see that type of action. I think we will see a lot of bidding duels here, because there is definitely some yearlings here that I think some of these major buyers will just say, I'm not leaving without that horse. Mm. There are some just that good that'll be the case. And then there'll be others there that provide great opportunities. So, you'll see a whole range of buyers here with different objectives, and hopefully they all take something home.
Looking through the media guide, the relations to Group 1 winners and stakes winners, and there's some mouthwatering relatives that are going to go through the ring. Exceedance, half-brother. There's a full brother to Tiakau Shark, just looking through here. Super Seth, Done Deal, all the way down to Booker and Pierata. Can you give us a couple of highlights that you're really looking forward to going through the ring over the next couple of days?
Well, look, let's just start with day one. I think there's Lot 45 for me could be the colt of the sale. Rising Romance, she was a top-class mare being offered by Arrowfield. It's a Schnitzel colt. I think he's a real star. There's a filly there on day one, Lot 149 as well. I Am Invincible, Vezelé being offered by Whitten. But, you know, it's that type of sale where it's very difficult to pick the top because, I mean, I could probably give you a list of 10 yearlings that could make $1 million, but which one makes 1.5 or 2? Well, that just comes down to a little bit of ego and passion and how much they really want to fight it out. It's very hard to pick the actual top in a sale like this, but you can certainly pick the ones that are going to be in the game.
Who's got the biggest ego? Who doesn't want to let go?
Well, at the moment, I like my job, so I'm staying for another couple of years. If I was leaving after the sale, I'd probably tell you the truth.
It is going to be a special sale in more ways than one because we see the last of the Redoutes going through as well. Mark and Lizzie, can you put into perspective, Mark, you first, just what he leaves as far as the landscape of breeding in Australia?
Well, I mean, he's just a phenomenon. Obviously, Dane Hill came before him and he's the best son of Dane Hill. And for the last 15 to 20 years, he's played such a big part in the Australian industry. But if I just zero in on Inglis and the Easter sale as an example, I think the stat I saw the other day is he's accounted for about 15% of our turnover at Easter. Over the last 15 years.
One stallion. That's incredible.
Which is a huge contribution for a stallion to make. And look, I've been in the role CEO here for 14 years. And one of the first things I would do when the team are assembling the catalogue is see how many reducers we had in the catalogue. And then I'd see how many Fastnet Rocks for a while there, how many in Costa de Lagos. And I'd be able to plan what the outcome might be. I mean, it literally came down to a couple of stallions that would just drive the outcome of the sale. But I'd have to say it was Redoutes that had the biggest impact during that period of time. And we could tell how the year was going to go, depending on how good a book he'd covered.
Incredible stallion. I had so much to do with a lot of his progeny, especially Miss Finland.
Yeah.
She was one of, you know, his best, won a Golden Slipper and then won an Oaks in the same year, which is quite remarkable. Such a versatile breed. And I think he's just a stallion that I will remember as a really, you know, strong Australian stalwart. And yeah, he really stamped his progeny and you could always see a Redoutes walking past.
Incredible, Maddie. We were talking yesterday, and you'll remember this. I'm not sure if you were there, but I was working for Sky back at the time, and you think of Redoutes now as the stallion, but he was such a brilliant horse, and we all remember the Caulfield Guineas battle with Testarossa, but that Golden Slipper day where he had the Golden Slipper at his absolute mercy, and Rick O'Lacey wandered in, dishevelled, shorts, T-shirt, thongs, into the mounting yard and said he's out. He's scratched.
Yes, you know, and the funny thing was, I wasn't working at Inglis at the time. I was working at News Corporation at the time in the media world, but I was using Tony Caracatanis. He was training a horse for me, and Redoutes was actually stabled at the back of Tony's facility there in Rose Hill, and I saw him in the morning, literally an hour before he was scratched. I remember saying to Tony, he doesn't look that good. I didn't know who it was. I thought, what's going on here? And he told me it was his favourite for the slipper. I couldn't believe it. But it's remarkable to think that, you know, I joined Inglis a year or two later and that we would then have a connection through the sale ring, et cetera, was quite bizarre.
I remember years after that. So we had an open day up at Arrowfield, and I remember wandering over to his paddock and leaning over after, you know, when you have three or four glasses at one of those things, and I was just looking at him, and he was just standing there next to me, and I tried to do the maths in my head about what this horse was worth, and he was only insurable. Mark might know more about, and Lizzie might know more about this than I do. He was only insurable up to a certain point, like about 200 million, but I did the maths in my head, looking at this four-legged creature about 5 metres away, just picking grass. And I worked out that he was worth about $1 billion in potential stake, in service fees and so on. At something like Mark, it was $260,000 a pop, and he was doing both hemispheres. And if you absolutely calculated 10 years ahead of what his earning power would be, he was going to earn over $1 million, $1 billion for his connections with service fees.
Well, it just goes to show, you know, what these stallions can do. They can change lives. And that's probably a reason why there are buyers here that probably covered 30 kilometres of ground over the last week looking at these horses, not once, not twice, but 3 times, you know. And they're looking for the next Redoutes. And, you know, the Autumn Sun was found out of this sale. He could be the next best or the next Redoutes choice. But without doing that homework, you know, people won't have those life-changing experiences, so they just have to get out and about and do that.
Speaking of that, we'll have a bit of a wander around, Lizzie, and have a chat to a few of the trainers as they're inspecting the horses. And yesterday I got to have a chat to Peter Moody and asked him to, you know, explain to the listeners what he's actually looking for, and also Chris Waller. He spoke about the Autumn Sun. But have a listen to a snippet of Chris Waller as to what he looks for and his process here at the sales. Mm-hmm.
Well, we start by looking at the catalogue, seeing their mums and dads and their brothers and sisters. And funny enough, Hungry Heart's got a sister in the sale, so they're little things you look at. You then look at the horses themselves. I particularly like just a horse that's got a great attitude towards life, and you don't want to be training horses that look difficult or have some issues to work out, because we've got to deal with them basically for every day for 3 or 4 years. So that's the first thing for me. And then you'd like to see a nice loose type, a good walking horse. And if they move well and if they're nice and athletic, you start to look at the finer details, but I wouldn't be too confused by that. We get a vet to look at them, and once the vet says, yep, that's all right, or no, I wouldn't like that because you'll struggle to train it, you come up with a list and you set values. And people might think the bigger trainers or the bigger owners have got deep pockets and just keep bidding, but it's far from the truth. We set values on them, and if something comes into the sale ring and our value that we like, then you buy it and you think about who you can sell it to. No use buying them if you can't sell them, because that becomes another nightmare. So it's a huge process, but yeah, step by step it slowly gets together.
Fascinating to get that insight from someone like Chris Waller. And you've spent, Lizzie, a lot of time with some of the big trainers and their processes that they go through. How much is learned? How much with these superstars is innate, the eye?
I think it's, personally, I think it's what you've retained, the images that you've retained over time. So when you're looking at horses all the time, you find your preference and what you like and what works with certain horses. It works with certain breeds as well. I think that's a lot to do with what type of horse that you like. Breeding, it's different strokes for different people. Mm. That's what the whole, it's not one size fits all. And I believe that a lot of people like an athlete, a lot of people like a walk, a lot of people like a head or ears. Like it's so different. So for me, it's, you know, you could talk to one set of connections and to opposed to another set, and it's completely different to what they like. So it's most of the good judges land on the same horses for the same reasons, for the breeding, for their athleticism. But personally, for me, I like to see an athlete, because that's what's going to be on a racetrack. Yeah. And attitude is so, so important.
Well, we've got a champion trainer who's just joined us here. Let's ask Chris Lees how he goes about picking his superstars. How are you, Chris?
Well, thanks, Michael.
Good to see you out here.
Good to be here.
How many times will you be pulling out these horses over the last few days before the sales?
Yeah, well, it's a long process. You know, you start getting around to as many studs as you can. But it's a smaller book, so it is a sale where you can look at the majority of horses and try to, but again, it's such quality. It's probably a sale you could stand up at the ring and just pick your mark as they're going through, because it's a wonderful catalogue.
Do you go on type and then the pedigree page?
Yes. Yeah, I do. You try and buy an athlete, but again, you're dealing with different budgets for different people, so you're just trying to find the right athlete that fits the right ownership group.
What sort of horse are you looking for at this sale? What's your sort of on your wish list?
Well, wish list and what I get is probably a different thing. I think this is a sale where you can buy a really nice filly. Look, some of the colts probably not in our category, because they're going to bring a lot of money, and there's big syndicates that really concentrate on that style of horse. But I think if you can just get below that top echelon. And it's only a top echelon here. It doesn't always transfer to racecourse. Yeah, there can be some good buying at an Easter sale if you target the right horses.
I was just thinking about what Lizzie was saying earlier about the little bits and pieces of horses that people look for. And there's also the eye. People are always seduced by the liquid eye and a kind eye and things like that. But, Chris, you're a very, very big trainer, but you're not probably as big as some. Are you in a certain marketplace at this sale? Is there a certain ceiling on how high you can go with your clients?
Yeah, most definitely. Yeah, no, as I said, you know, we won't be I wouldn't expect we'll be involved in them big, expensive colts that'll be in the sale toppers. But, you know, I'm hopeful that we can get a couple of nice horses and some nice fillies. There's some wonderful pedigrees here to get involved in, and they're certainly horses that we're hopeful that we can be involved with.
I'm sure Mark will be trying to twist your arm.
Well, there's bound to be a couple of Samantha Misses out there. I do remember you buying her a couple of years ago, and she did a great job for you.
Yeah, well, she was a $1.5 million filly.
Is that one of the most expensive you bought?
Yeah, well, Ron Crogan, who bought her at the time, and he bought her on his own. So yeah, to pay $1.5 million for a filly, we're talking 2006, I think. Yeah, she went through the sale. So she was a rarity at the time because she won that and then sold for $4 million or whatever she did off the track. So they don't come around that often.
Do you feel any pressure when you've got a million-dollar-plus horse?
Yeah, I did then. She certainly... Well, it's precious what the owner puts on it, and Ron Craig never put any pressure on it whatsoever, but she was obviously very talented from day one. So the pressure was when she was going to the races because we were expecting her to win every time.
Well, you should be cashed up. You've got the All-Star Mile money still in your pocket.
I don't think it's come yet.
Pocket. Oh, hasn't it?
Good clicking refresh.
Looking forward to this weekend,
Aussie
Mugatu.
So. Yeah, he's one horse that's probably been advantaged by the extra week. So 4 weeks between runs, staying at a mile, an ideal scenario for him. And he's in really good order.
Has he been sort of working well? Has he gone to another level? Or do you think he's just maintained as...
Hugh was very happy. He's done minimal work. Staying at the mile was always that. That's the little risk with him. And he had a gallop last Tuesday between races that Hugh come up and rode him. And everything would suggest he's in as good an order as what he was at Moonee Valley a few weeks ago.
And potential to back up into the Queen's?
Yeah, very much so. The fact he's staying at the mile, I think I would expect he'll come out of the run pretty well. He's backed up once before and it didn't work when he was 12 months ago, but that was off a hard Mannion Cup into a Tancred, and it was at a time when no one, a bit of uncertainty whether how long we were race for, so we were probably a touch greedy by running him again. But there's every likelihood he'll back up into a Queen Elizabeth.
Gee, it is going to be almost the race of the year, the Queen Elizabeth. Very elegant, a Dave's, a Dragonair, Mugatu. It's mouthwatering.
We just need a bit of rain.
I think it looks a really good race on paper.
All right, Chris, we better let you go and inspect the horses and put your hand in your pocket nice and deep for the next couple of days. Best of luck, Chris.
Thanks, Michael. Thanks, Tim. Cheers, Evan.
Chris Lee's joining us there. Michael, better let you go and do the rounds as well. We'll look forward to catching up with you and your team, and also you're farewelling one of your longest servants here this week as well, so it will be a touch emotional that final day as well.
Yes, it will. Look, Simon Vivian's been a great servant, not just to English, but the whole industry, of course, over 44 years. And we had a farewell dinner for him actually on Thursday. So we got in early and had that dinner, and it was a very special night. Not only one speech at the end, but I think there were five or six, and I had to push hands down. Everyone wanted to say something, but you know, that says something about Simon.
Yeah, we'll catch up with Simon on his last morning out here at the sales. Mark, best of luck.
Okay, thank you.
Mark Webster, the managing director here of Inglis.